Okay, good morning, everybody. Good Chodesh. We're on Perek Chav Dalet here in the Tiferes Yisrael. As you certainly recall, though it's been a couple of weeks, it's been 3 weeks since we got together as a group, the morale here is in the phase now, speaking about Torah, is speaking about the actual giving of the Torah and the giving of the Torah to Moshe. And what he's going to talk about today is really expound upon a very relatively well-known Agadita in the Gemara in Shabbos, where the Gemara speaks about how Moshe Rabbeinu was able to claim the Torah when he went up to heaven. He brings the Agada after asking a question. And the basic question is, as he starts the chapter, HaTorah shi seichel ha-poshut ha-elyon. Torah, we constantly describe as this pure, simple seichel elyon, higher wisdom. And in fact, in a great sense, it's not natural to exist down here. It is this pure, perfect seichel elyon, unconfounded, unconfused by humanity. If you recall, some of you may recall, that I hope some of you recall, but I don't know if any of you recall. It's like a long time ago. The Be'er HaGoyla, the Maral in the Be'er HaGoyla, one of his discussions was about the halachas. If you remember, the Be'er HaSheni was about halachas in the Torah that seemed counterintuitive. So one of the things which he brought there was, the rule is as follows. If a Sanhedrin decides by a margin of 36 to 34 that someone is supposed to be put to death, what's the din? The din is that the person is put to death. But if the Sanhedrin decides by a margin of 70 to 0 that the person is supposed to be put to death, the person is not put to death. Sanhedrin shiro kulam l'chayva. Sanhedrin sees completely for guilt, so then we're not going to put the person to death. What's the reason? The way the Gemara says it is because, you know, you need halana. There's a rule, you have to sleep on it. In other words, before they give a death penalty, they have to sleep on it to reconsider. And if there haven't been really any counterpoints, any counterarguments, then it's meaningless to reconsider, and therefore they can't fulfill that halacha, and therefore they can't carry it through. It's a very surprising din, you know. Guy gets up in the middle of the opening ceremony of the Olympics in front of 70,000 people and an international televised audience, and he picks up a gun and holds it to somebody's head, and two people come and say, do you know if you do that, you're going to be chayav misa? And he says, yes, I realize it. And there on national television in front of all these people, he goes and he kills him. So it's a slam dunk. There, you're not going to give him the death penalty because of this thing. So the Maral explained, it's a fascinating and very important piece in the Maral. He had two explanations, but the first explanation is why I'm citing this for us. He says the idea is like this, because the Sanhedrin understands that their job is to bring Torah as human beings, and to bring Torah into this world, into this human world, and that's not a natural fit. That in order for a person to be able to understand the truth of Torah, it's not blink, it's not instinct, it is something that the person has to work to cut through all the layers that perhaps would get in the way. And where Sanhedrin don't exhibit that, it just so happens in this case perhaps they don't need to do that, right? In this case it's so obvious. But the nature of how the Sanhedrin is supposed to function is deliberative. Hevu mesunim badin, the very first teaching of Pirkei Avos, right? Which was the teaching of the Anshei Knesset Hagdola, the ultimate, in a certain sense, the ultimate Sanhedrin, the men of the Great Assembly. Their first teaching was, hevu mesunim badin, be deliberate in judgment. Understand that to come to the truth called Torah, the Seichel Elyon, the higher Seichel, for you down here, it's not just simple, it's not natural. So where the Sanhedrin seem to act as if their understanding of the situation is natural, it betrays their normal function. It betrays what's supposed to be their normal function, and therefore it's not acceptable. Therefore it's not acceptable. Right? The other pshat which the Maharal said was also of a similar thing of betraying their nature is that the Sanhedrin is supposed to din, even judgment is supposed to be a good and positive thing in the world. Where the Sanhedrin never has a chance to exhibit its charitable nature by going through arguments for defense of the person, so then they can't do their job. If you want to do, right, a person sometimes has to be a disciplinarian, right? He sometimes got to be a disciplinarian. But what he teaches here is that in order to be able to be a disciplinarian of goodness, a good disciplinarian, you have to be able to somehow have almost internally, in the action itself, an exhibition of that goodness, a display of that goodness. Here, there's nobody who could say a nice thing about the guy, so they can't show that. They can't show that, so therefore they shouldn't do it at all. The Sanhedrin has to be characteristic of their mission. So I say this to you, just, you know, this is the background of the question. This is the way we think. This is the way the Maharal teaches us all the time. Torah, while of course it's natural to the neshama, which is why many times we do speak about a person having a moral instinct down here somewhere in the soul, wherever the soul is located, that goes ping, ping, ping when he does the right thing and buzz, buzz, buzz when he does the wrong thing. There is something in there which is inherent, but it's not simple. It's not something which is simple for the person to identify. So if that's the case, why did Hashem bring the Torah down here altogether? Why doesn't it stay where it's natural, in the pure, in the realm of the heavenly and the detached from the confusion of the physical world? Why is it down here to begin with? That's the fundamental question which he asks over here, and of course that's a question which is discussed pretty much explicitly by the Gemara. The Gemara in Shabbos tells the following story, midrashic story. Gemara in Shabbos, daf peches amud beis. B'sho sh'ola Moshe la'amorim, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the heights, to the heavens, omru malachi asharis lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono shel Olam, mali yeludisha beinenu. The angel said before Hashem, Master of the world, what is a yeludisha? What is a person born of a woman? What is a mere mortal doing amongst us? What's he doing here? Omar lahem lekabel Torah ba. He came to receive the Torah. Omru lefanav, they said before him, Chemda genuza shegenuza loch teisha meyes v'shivim v'arbadaris kodem shenivaylam atem avakish nitna lebasar v'dam. I'm going to run through the Gemara, okay? Then we'll try to walk through the Gemara. Maybe crawl through the Gemara. He says, this precious treasure, this hidden treasure, that was developed 974 generations before the world was created. It precedes the world. Now you're giving it to a human being of flesh and blood. It's not of this world. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, what Maharal's going to explain, right? If it's created separate from the world, so then, you know, why are you narrowing it? Why are you placing it in here? Mo'enesh kisiskerenu ven adam kisifgedenu. It cites the verse in the 8th Psalm, Tehillim, what is man that you should recall him? Child of man that you should remember him? Hashem adeinenu ma'adir shimcha b'chol ha'aretz asher t'nahitcha l'ashamayim. Hashem, how glorious would your name be throughout the earth, but place your glory upon the heaven. Yeah.
It says also that the Torah was given after it, you know, Derech Eretz Kabbalah of Torah Chaf Vav Doros. So if you had 26 and 974.
1,000.
Is that the reason it's
974? That's the reason. The Drasha is because the Pasuk says, Davar Tziva Le'elef Dor. Right? He instructed it for 1,000 generations, which actually the way it's understanding is he instructed it that it should actually be given over 1,000 generations later. Exactly right.
Do we have any idea what that point, since the generation precedes time? Time was
that good. We did that in Be'er HaGoyla.
You're
in trouble. Yeah. Okay. How do you define generations before time?
Point off on that.
Huh?
They get a point off on that. Did I make it up?
974 points off for that. Omer le'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Achzir len tshuva. Hashem says to Moshe, respond to them. Omer lefanav Ribbono shel Olam. But I'm afraid that they're going to burn me up with the heat in their breath. Amar lei echayz b'kisei kavaydi v'chazer lehen shuva. So grab onto my glorious throne, the throne of my glory, and respond to them that way, as it says, mi'achaz p'nei kisei parsaz alav ananoi, v'amar avnocha melamet shepirei shakai miziv shchinosai v'ananoi alav. Hashem spread, right? It says, holding on to the throne, parsaz alav ananoi is Hashem spread ziv. Parsaz is, he's peras zaz, peras ziv. He spread upon him his glory and ananoi, and the cloud of his presence. So you're going to be in some protective balloon. Amar lefan of Rabbeinu Shlalem, Torah shata naisim limaksiv ba. So he said, Master of the world, what does it say in the Torah? I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Mitzrayim. Lemitzrayim, your Adatim, tell me, angels, did you go down to Egypt? Leparei nishtabaratem, were you enslaved to Paro? What else, he says, Hashem, what else did you write in the Torah? It says you shouldn't have other gods. Bein amim matim shruim, so Maisha turns to the angels. Do you live amongst nations that serve other gods? Right? That you have to be addressing this? What else does it say in it? Remember the Shabbos. Do you guys work 6 days? Do you have to have a seventh day of rest? Do you have parents? Right? That you have kabed asavicha v'asimecha? Do you have business dealings that you have to worry about? False oaths and so on and so forth, taking Hashem's name in vain. Do you have jealousy and lust that you should have to worry about murder and you have to worry about adultery and all kinds of things? Says the Gemara, Miyad Haidu Lo LaKadosh Baruch Hu. The angels immediately acknowledge to Hashem, yeah, okay, makes sense. Shenemar, as it says, Hashem Adinenu Adu Shimcha B'chol Haaretz. When that psalm, when that eighth capital Tillim comes back and repeats the phrase, Hashem, our master, how mighty is your name, glorious is your name in the earth, it doesn't come back and say that you should place your glory over the heavens. They said, you know what, it makes sense, it should be down there. Everybody became a loving friend of Moshe and gave him something. Parting gifts. Shenemar, as it says, Alisa Lamorim, you went up to the heavens, Shaviso Shevi, Lakachta Matanais Ba'adam. You took prisoner, so to speak, you took captive and you got gifts. Ba'adam. What does that mean? Gifts in man? No, Bishar Shecharucha Adam Lakachta Matanais. Because they called you man, because they recognized the uniqueness of man, they gave you gifts. And even the Malach HaMavis, even the angel of death, gave him something. As it says, he gave that Moshe knew a secret of the Ketores stopping the plague of death. Where did he get it from? He got it from the angel of death when he was up there. That's what the Gemara says. That's the story. And it's a classic. I'm sure many of you, not all of you, are familiar with this Gemara, with this basic story. The Torah is given in order to be able to have it down here. And as classically, as I think I said to you before, that's the idea that the Gemara says. The Gemara says, Batzeres, even though there's a debate about how one would celebrate a Yom Tov, and some would say you could celebrate completely in spiritual ways, but Batzeres, everybody agrees, on Shavuos, everybody agrees that you have to have also a meal. Kulei Am Amayda Debeinanami Lachem. Why? Because it's the day that the Torah was given. Right? So it's explained. Well, what does that mean? You know, if anything, it should be otherwise. Rashi has an explanation. But a classic explanation is because, look, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven and they said, what are you doing here? And his answer was, Torah was given to people to human beings. So we should fast. We shouldn't eat. We shouldn't act human. If we don't act human on Shavuos, then Hashem will say, for angels, I got better ones up here. I don't need to give it to you. Right? I'm giving it to you because I want to put the Torah down on this earth. So act like human beings. Eat. Right? Eat like human beings and accept the Torah and bring the Torah into that. Okay, so that's the classic thing in the Gemara. This obviously is addressing, however it's addressing it, it's addressing what the Maharal's question is. Why does Hashem bring the Torah? Why is the Torah fitting down to the earth? So in this Gemara, it's addressing that question, but we have to, of course, now uncover the layers of what the Gemara means. Now, I want to just begin by something the Maharal says several pages, at least Hartman pages, into this discussion, several paragraphs into this discussion. And that is like this. When the Gemara tells this story, that Moshe went up to heaven, and the angel said this, and Hashem said this, and Moshe said this, and the angel said that, and so on and so forth, he says, don't read it as a conversation. Of course, that's the way Chazal convey it, in a way that it, you know, it makes it clear in its own way. But what it's really describing is the dynamic of the order of things in the world. What indeed everything would be vying for. When Moshe Rabbeinu speaks, he doesn't speak by saying, oh, the angels asked me this question, let me answer them this question. The angels asking the question is like the question the Maharal posed at the beginning of the chapter. Why should the Torah go down to this earth? Right? And when Moshe grabs onto Hashem's throne, when Hashem says, Moshe, answer the question, right? So, you know, that's again part of the order of things. Hashem turns to man and gives man the ability to, indeed, unique ability to lay claim to why it is that the Torah doesn't belong up there in heaven, but instead has to be down here. So while it's presented as a story on a day that happened when Moshe Rabbeinu happened to went up to the heavens and got into this conversation, that's not the way that we really see what's happening over here. What we see here is the dynamic between the spiritual forces called the angels, the Ribbono Shel Olam, man, how everything fits into the world, and how we are supposed to understand the relationship of each of those things to the Torah. And so to speak, that's how they speak. That's how they speak. Right? You know, the Rambam writes that that in Sefer Melochim, when Shlomo HaMelech became the king, so it says that he spoke to the trees and to the plants. He wasn't some kind of an eccentric gardener, right, says the Rambam. But rather, what was he doing? Right, when it says he spoke to them, means that he was made to understand, when Hashem gave him that gift of fantastic wisdom, what Hashem was doing was, he was saying, look, you're going to understand the role that every single thing plays in the world. So then, that's what it means, that the plant speaks, that he speaks to the plant. He understands what it is. He understands the unique use of this herb, of this leaf, of this branch, of everything. Right? He was able, so to speak, in that sense, to speak to it. Speaking with these conversations are metaphors between purpose and role that these various things are playing. Okay, so what is it? What is it? What is this quote-unquote conversation? What is this? What is this give and take? So obviously, the beginning of the question is, right, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to heaven. If you recall, earlier the Maharal spoke about Moshe, and he spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu as being this sort of bridge between heaven and earth. Anochi Omed Bein Hashem Uveinechem. I stand between Hashem and you. Maharal, if you remember, helped us picture it by analyzing Moshe Rabbeinu's name, Moshe. Why that was his name, if you recall. Mem is traditionally the middle letter, the bridge. Remember, in the word Emes, right, which is considered to be a continuum of constancy, so it's Aleph, the first letter of the Aleph phase, Mem, the middle, and Tuf, the last. Mem is the middle. And Shin, right, is the top. Is the top, but it's not quite the top. The top would be Tuf. Tuf would be the highest. Right? But by regarding Moshe Rabbeinu, it says as well that the Chasreyu Ma'at Me'elekim, he wasn't all the way up. Right? He didn't have the element of being all the way up. He had 49 gates of wisdom. He didn't have 50. Right? He wasn't allowed access all the way. So he had Shin. And on the other hand, he had Hay. What's Hay? So as the Maharal explained, you have the Yesodos, you have the basic foundational elements. You have Domain, then you have the inanimate part of the world, the land itself, which is made from those elements. Then you have the Tzomech, the plants which grow from them. Then you have Chai. Then you have animals, right, living things, and then you have humankind. Humankind is the fifth step, starting from the bottom. So Moshe was a human being on the fifth rung in the ladder of creation. On the one hand, he was down here, feet on the ground. On the other hand, he was up there, and he was somehow supposed to bridge those two. So when Moshe Rabbeinu goes to get the Torah, we describe it as Moshe Rabbeinu going up Lamorim, going up to the heavens. Right here, he has to access the heavenly part. He has to play that role. And the angels, who have 2 feet planted in the heavens, who are completely spiritual beings, they say, look, Moshe Rabbeinu, nice guy, but he's still Yilud Isha. He's born of a woman. And that's the description which is given for a human being, a physical thing. Right? A physical thing. Remember, because we speak about that as Yalud Isha, as one who's created of a woman, is because how the Torah describes man and how the Torah describes woman, right? Man ends up with a higher spiritual description. He ends up with a higher spiritual description. Hashem created man. He formed him dust from the earth, and he blew into him a breath of life. He blew into him a breath of life. The neshama was blown into the soul of man directly. Isha, when the woman was created, Hashem describes breaking off a piece of man, which man then described as bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, not soul of my soul. Hashem never blew directly into the Isha, the neshama. Now, of course, the woman had the neshama because when it was infused into man, it was infused into every part of him. But this is part of this idea, which the Maharal writes about in every place, is that, and it's written in many tzvarim, is that woman to man is more chomer tetzura. Right? So in a sense, there's a greater presence of that physicality which would be there. Although, of course, it's not true in every way, because in many, 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 many ways we see a greater and more tangible spirituality in females than in males, because of their facility to connect. They have a greater ability to connect, right? But nevertheless, right? The term Yalud Isha in this sense is used to describe that. So says the, so the angels are saying, look, you know, we appreciate a little bit about Moshe, but we know where we stand with 2 feet in the heavens. What's he doing up here? He's a foreigner. He's coming. He's trying to bridge this gap. What is he doing here? That would be the natural difficulty about Moshe, about a human being ascending to spirituality. Hashem's response is, he's here to receive the Torah. Because receiving the Torah is exactly that. You have to go to the heavens to receive the Torah. The Torah is spiritual. The Torah is something which is from that other world. So if he wants to receive the Torah, he's got to some degree to come here. Now you remember, of course, that the Chumash says about the Torah, Leba Shamayim, it's not in the heavens. Right? It's not in the heavens. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to go to the heavens to get it?
Maybe that was afterward. Lo
Mashmahi. Once Moshe Rabbeinu got it, it's no longer in the heavens. Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu, that was his thing. He brought it down. He brought it down. Before the Torah was formulated, before the Torah says its words about, you know, to bring it down to earth, it wouldn't happen. It took Moshe Rabbeinu to go up. Moshe Olo Elohai Elohim, and then Hashem called out, and he said, and he made it that it would be able to come down to earth. But now, once the Torah is given, that's the expression the Gemara already says. Once the Torah is given, so now we say, no longer is the Torah in the heavens. It was, but it's not anymore. So now, when we look at it, we say Leiv Hashemayim. But Moshe Rabbeinu, to originally get it, had to go up to the Shemayim. So the angels are shocked. The Torah? You're going to give the Torah to him? The Torah is this treasure which preceded the creation of the world. And if that's the case, so that means that the Torah is not limited by the physical world. If it was limited by the physical world, it would have been created within the physical world. But if it's created so beyond, so much preceding the physical world, then what do you mean? Why should you give it to man? Why should you give it to man? Mo'enoish kisiskerenu uven adam kisifkedenu. Maral Kedarko explains the phrase and the use of the phrase here on two levels. Enoish and ben adam. Enoish, he says, refers to the nefesh, to the soul. And ben adam refers to the body. And tiskerenu is a positive expression. Zechira is usually said l'tayva, for good. Tifkedenu is often harsher. It's not always harsh, but pekida can be l'ra, as Chazal say. Pekida can be can be difficulty. Yeah.
Since Enosh was not known as a Eved Hashem, why does the Maharal tell us that the darshan, that that's the aspect that pertains to the soul? I would have thought the other round.
Okay, so it's a very good question. Enosh is a term which is used for man. It's a, you know, small m, but Enosh was also a specific person. Adam is a term which is used for man, and Adam was also a specific person, right? And here we speak about Ben Adam, we speak about Neged Haguf, interestingly. There's a third term for man.
There was five.
Ish. What?
There were five. Adam, Ben Adam, Enosh, Ish, and Gever.
Okay. Right. Gever also.
I'm not chickening out, just doing Gever.
Points back?
Huh?
The Maral writes somewhere in Pirkei Avos, I don't remember where, that Adam and Ish is Gematria Enosh. Adam and Ish is Gematria Enosh. You put the Adam together with Ish is Gematria. The numerical value is Enosh. It's off by one. Okay, but it's off by one in the right direction. Enosh is one less, right? So Enosh, Ima Kolel, is going to be Adam and Adam and Ish. What's the significance of that? So basically, again, I don't remember exactly where it is, but Maral developed someplace that the idea is Ish is always a term of significance, right? Ish is a term of mastery, of control, of significance. And Adam is, you know, would be a term of, you know, very basic. Adam, the name, the way the Torah says it is, from Adama. Yitzhar Shavakim as Adam, afar min ha Adama, as dust from the earth. Now, of course, we know that Adam also is Demus, right? Also has that same term Demus, the image Adame le'elyoin, right? I will be like Hashem above. But the simple read of the pasuk is afar min ha adama, and the term ben adam, vayiru b'nei ha'alehim es b'nei sa'adam, is a term for man in his most physical sense. Ish is the highest. Enosh is when those two get mixed together. It's not man in control, the soul in control. It's not adam. It's not the earth completely in control. It's already a lower level, a mix. And that's a representative to some degree of Enosh, the grandson of Adam HaRishon, who already brought into the world idol worship. Brought into the world, Oz Huchal Likre B'Shem Hashem, whether it was in his time, as some understand, or whether it was he himself, right? But it was brought into the world idol worship. So here, obviously, when they're going to be speaking about the two sides, right? The angels not speaking positively, they're not going to be speaking about the highest form of man. In fact, the term for Moshe Rabbeinu is usually, what is the term? Ish. V'ha'ish Moshe Anav Ma'id. In last week's, 2 weeks ago's Parsha, Parshas Yisrei. What does it say? V'yishalu ish l're'eu l'shalom. Right? One man greeted another. So who greeted who? It's not clear. It's ambiguous. Is Yisrei greeting Moshe or is Moshe greeting Yisrei? It brings Rashi, it was Moshe greeting Yisrael. Why? Because it says Ish, and Moshe Rabbeinu is the Ish. He is, as we would say, the man. Right? He is the Ish. So therefore, right? So the it's pointed that the angels say, Ma enosh kisiskerenu, uven adam kisifkedenu. They're not used to a barrier like this, to something like this, to a Moshe Rabbeinu, to an Ish. Why are you thinking of him? Why are you even mentioning him and remembering him? Even if he has a nefesh, right? But is he worthy of this? Tanahit chal hashamayim, right? It's in the heavenly realms that this is to work. This is what the Maral says. So Hashem says to Moshe, he says, "I want you to respond. I want you to respond." And this is where the Maral comes in with that explanation that I told you in introduction of this parak. He says, it's not like a conversation. Hashem says, you know, I could really answer this question, but Moshe, why don't you answer that question? I think you should answer the question. No, the idea is that the nature of Moshe, of what Moshe was, speaks for itself, so to speak, into why this should happen. Should speak for itself to explain why the Torah really belongs in his hands to be brought down to earth. Moshe, the barrier called Moshe, the being called Moshe, says that. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, yes, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid because they might consume me by Hevel Piyam, by the fire, by the heat, which is generated by their mouth, by their breath. What's the idea? Now, you know, everyone is afraid of being burned out when they approach the spiritual. It's a big difficulty to approach the spiritual and not be burned up. After Matan Torah, what did the Jewish people say? After the Ten Commandments, what did the Jewish people say to Moshe Rabbeinu? How can any human being of flesh and blood approach God and survive? We can't. You have to do it, Moshe. We can't do it. Kamoinu like us vayechen will survive. You know, it's a very interesting thing, beautiful thing, I think. The first time Moshe Rabbeinu has a vision of Har Sinai, when was it?
The burning bush.
The burning bush. When Moshe Rabbeinu is shepherding Yisro's sheep, he comes to the mountain of Elohim to Chorev, and Hashem appears to him from inside a burning bush. And he sees that the bush is burning, but it's not being consumed. What's the significance of that image? Chazal say, you know, the Midrashim, you know, here you are, you're suffering in Golus, but you're not going to be destroyed in Golus. Hashem himself resides in a thorn bush, right? Because he says, look, if you're struggling, so then I'm struggling. If you're in pain, I'm in pain. I'm not sitting on a comfortable armchair if you're in Golus. Right? It's all aspects of the Panim L'Torah. But there's another aspect, and this is found as well, more obscure sources, but it's found as well. This was the model image, the original model image, the original model image of what was going to ultimately occur at Har Sinai. What was that? The fire of Hashem's presence. The fire is going to represent Hashem. That's what's going to be shown at Har Sinai. And it's going to come down amongst the people, the flesh, the twigs, which would usually be fuel for the fire. We should be consumed by the fire. But what's going to happen? They're not going to be burned up. Right? We saw now, right? It's like a contradiction. If there's a chumash, look at this. Delicious contradiction of Pesukim. Vatimru, and they said, Hein heronu Hashem Elokeinu es kvoidei ves godlei ves kolei shamanu mitoich ha'esh. Hashem has shown us his honor and his greatness, and his voice we have heard from the midst of the fire. Hayom hazeh ro'inu ki yedaber Elokim es adam v'chay. Today we have seen that God can speak to man and man will live. He'll survive. V'yata, and now, lama namus, why should we die? Ki seichleinu ha'esh ha'gdoi la'azois, that this great fire will consume us. If we continue to hear the voice of God, we will die. So, what flesh has heard the voice of the living God speaking from the fire like us and survived? You go close, and you'll speak to us everything that Hashem has to say. It's filled with contradictions. On the one hand, it says, today we've seen that God could speak to man, and man will survive. But then, we can't speak to God because we won't survive. Because a man can't speak to God and survive. So why don't you speak to God? And you know, like
it was like sending your little brother. You go across.
Chas v'chalila, right? So first thing, right? So you understand, of course, that what they're saying is that okay, we had a little bit of a temporary experience where Hashem said separate for 3 days, and we were able to put ourselves in the position to some degree of Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, for a blink, right, for a moment in time and experience this thing of not being consumed, we won't be able to do it. For us, it was to some degree unnatural. For us, we weren't really ready for it. We leapt ahead to be able to have it. We can't sustain it. Moshe Rabbeinu, you sustain it. You'll be able to sustain it. For you, it is suitable longer term. That's the exception, Moshe Rabbeinu, not the rule. But what we saw was that it could happen. So, I mean, don't you hear this is exactly the same mofes, the same tremendous miracle that Moshe Rabbeinu first saw? Wow, there's a fire in the thorn bush and it's not being consumed? And look at these words over here. The fire of Hashem to human beings and they don't get destroyed? It's clearly, clearly a image of things to come here at the mountain of Har Sinai, of the ability to somehow bridge these gaps, resolve the contradiction. Remember, by the way, where does the word Shamayim come from? What does Rashi teach us in the beginning of Bereishis? Eish and Mayim, fire and water. Why? Because fire and water, generally speaking, cannot coexist. What happens? Either the fire, you know, evaporates the water, or the water douses and eradicates the fire. You can't have fire and water sitting together. One of the two will happen, right? If it's a small amount, it'll burn it up. If it's a large amount, it'll, you know, the water will win over the fire. Shamayim is somehow the resolution of those contradictions. There, all those things together can exist. So on some level, this, which is a contradiction, for Moshe Rabbeinu to have it, to some degree, he has to go to the Shamayim. And Hashem, when he comes down on Har Sinai, we had those expressions in last week's parsha. You saw, if you managed to go over the Rashi's by Maamar Har Sinai, right? A couple of times Rashi points out how Hashem brought the heavens down over the earth onto Har Sinai. That's what happened there, right? In order to some degree to resolve this contradiction. But that's the idea. Moshe Rabbeinu says, but one second, I'm afraid. When Moshe Rabbeinu came to the burning bush, and he saw, wow, it's not being consumed. Wow, that's cool. What's going on? Excuse me for being so like superficial or flip-sounding about it. But then Hashem says, Moshe, it's me, right? I'm the God of your fathers, of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And what is Moshe Rabbeinu's immediate response? He turns away his face. Why? Because how can he look at Hashem and not be consumed? How can he look at Hashem and not be consumed? And maybe there was something of a lost opportunity there, as the Gemara says in Brachas.
What did he know at the time?
First introduction to God. So how can you quote unquote, how can you blame him, right? But Hashem's there. He's exposing himself to Moshe Rabbeinu in the positive sense. So why not? So whatever it is, the Gemara has two pshatim, whether Moshe Rabbeinu is applauded for turning away or sanctioned for turning away. But he But this is the idea. So Moshe Rabbeinu goes up, right? The angels, they have a point. The Torah is something from another world, right? Can I respond to that issue? Can I, to some degree I am human. To some degree I am human. So how do I respond to this? So Hashem says to him, grab onto the throne of my glory and respond. So what does that mean? What is the throne of Hashem's glory? Hashem's seat. Hashamayim kisi. V'ha'oretz hadayim ragloi. The heavens are my throne. Right? We wear the tzitzis. We don't usually, but we used to wear the tzitzis with the blue thread. Some people still do. Right? To remind us of the ocean, of the heavens, of Hashem's throne. Hashem's throne is up there in the heavens. Hashamayim kisi. It's the verse, right? Kayamar Hashem. Hashamayim kisi. Ha'aretz hadayim ragle. The earth is my footstool. It's my footrest. We read about the footrest yesterday. Right? Remember? They saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'tachas raglov, and beneath his feet was Kimasa Livnas Hasapir, was like a sapphire brick. What color is sapphire?
blue. Right? It's the blue of the tchelos. Right? The footstool isn't it's a set, right? You know, from the best upholsterers, right? It was ke'etzem hashamayim latayar. It was itself, it's part of it. And parenthetically, what else would he say is the Beis Hamikdash? Is Hadayim Raglav. Remu Hashem Elokeinu Mishtach Hadayim Raglav. Beis Hamikdash, which is Hashem's place on this earth. Right? That's what it is. The Kisei HaKavod is where the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu could come to rest. Where it could come to rest. So the Maharal says here something which is so simple. And this is like really mystical stuff, right? Everybody okay? Right? Still levitating yet? Okay, so but listen to what the Maharal says. And this is so strong, so clear, so clear. It's like beautifully clear. Mystical but clear. Yecheskel, you have the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? The chariot, chapter 1, where we read through this morning. The throne of Hashem's glory has the image of man on it, engraved on the Kisei HaKavod. Right? Demus Adam, Pnei Adam. Right? The face of man. Adam Arishon, Yaakov Avinu. Right? It was there on the throne of Hashem's glory. The angels were not on Hashem's throne. The angels surrounded Hashem's throne. Says the Maharal, the seat of Hashem, so to speak, the nosei, the bearer of the spirit, is Adam. The angels don't bear the spirit. The angels are floating around up there. They're there with the spirit. They too need to be born, O-R-N-E. Adam is the bearer of the spirit. Adam is part of the throne, part of the kisei. When Hashem says to Adam, oh, you're afraid to answer the question because you're there and you're seeing the pure spirituality of the angels, Adam, grab onto my throne. My throne is yours. You're part of my throne. The idea here is that you are the bearer of the spirit. The twigs are the bearer of the fire. Now the twigs, when they bear the fire, what happens is usually they're gone. They disappear, they're consumed, they're destroyed by bearing the fire. But Hashem's throne isn't destroyed by his presence seated upon it, so to speak. He needs a throne, quote unquote, to sit on relative to this earth. The idea of Hashem creating the world is, to some degree, to create a dira, to create a place of residence, a material being, a material context within which Hashem too can reside. And man is a part of that, a fundamental part of that. Man is part of the Kisei HaKavod. Don't be so afraid by them, scared off by the Malachim, because you're part of the Kisei HaKavod. You're there to bear, to carry my presence in this world. And isn't that anyway going to be your answer? Isn't that going to be your answer? The answer is going to be that, oh, of course there's an ephemeral Torah. But I'm here to give the Torah legs, to give it a connection down here. Raglayim. Hadayim Raglav. I'm here to connect it to the ground. Hashem says to Adam, that's your place. Just look around here in heaven. Look. They're on my throne. You're there. That's you. That's your response. That's what the human being is supposed to be. Adam, man to begin with, was created as that bridge. Hashem created all of creation, all of his work down here on the earth. And when he finished, he said, but one second, there's no connection to heaven. There's no connection. There's nothing there that connects to me. So let me create Tzalmeinu Kidmuseinu, something that's going to be earthy and spiritual, a connection between heaven and earth. And Moshe was the consummate representation of that connection. But that's our raison d'etre. That's what we're there for. That's our unique capacity. So, of course, don't be scared. That's your job. You're the throne. You're on the throne. Yeah.
This is my ignorance in this, but Moshe goes up to speak with Hashem. He goes to the top of the mountain. Is that what we understand? Or does he actually enter, like, he leave the earth and move up to the Shemayim?
Both. Both.
Use the same metaphor by Rabbi Shmuel.
Moshe Allah El HaElokim. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to God. That's what it says when they arrived at Har Sinai. He went up to God, and Hashem spoke to him, and so on and so forth. Right? So, how does this happen? Moshe Allah El HaElokim. Right? It sounds like he's going all the way up there. He's going all the way up there to God.
It sounds
at first glance like he left the mountain, like he left the mountaintop. But then, what does it say? Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. Hashem came down onto Har Sinai, says Rashi. Yochol Yorad Olav Mamish. Hashem really came down onto Har Sinai. But it says, "Kimin Hashemayim dibarti imachem." You saw that I spoke to you from the heavens, so it doesn't sound like he was on Har Sinai. Melamed shehirken shemayim ha'elyoinim v'tachtoinim v'itzion al gabi ha'ar kematza alamita. What he did was, he spread out the heavens, and he brought it down and spread it over the mountain like a bedspread. He brought the heavens down to the mountain. So, on the one hand, you say Hashem descended onto Har Sinai. On the other hand, Hashem spoke from the heavens. He brought the heavens down here. And says Rashi, V'yorad kisei akoved aleihem. And the heavenly throne, that throne, came and perched itself on the Shemayim, on top of the mountain. That's the way Hashem made it.
One last question. Is the Merkava and the kisei akoved the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, Merkava, you know, so to speak, is moving, but it's the same general thing. The same general thing. That which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upon.
So when they say that Isaac, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, are on actually the corners, remember hearing that in the Gemara, that there's engraved in the corners of pictures of them or something?
Now, there's an expression which Ha'avais Heinehin HaMerkava. Because I'll say the Avais are the Merkava, are the chariot of Hashem's Shechina. There aren't four images of Adam on the Merkava, there's one. And that was the image of Adam and of Yaakov Avinu. So again, you got to put together the various things. Each one has their aspect and their place. Right? Rashi again says the same thing by the other Pasuk, which he asked before as the contradiction. You have seen that I spoke to you from the heavens. Says Rashi, Hashem came down Har Sinai. Right? So what's the idea? There's another Pasuk, Hashem heard a voice, and on the earth he showed the fire. His presence, his honor is in the heavens, his fire and his strength is on the earth. Another pshat is, he's lowered the heavens onto the earth. He's creating that connection between heaven and earth, which is the original plan altogether of the whole Bria, was to somehow melt it back together. But that's what man is supposed to do. And the Kiseh HaKavod is the representation of that. The Kisei HaKavod is the representation of that. Hashem's throne, what Hashem wants to dwell upon. And Adam is part of that. We are part of that. So don't be shy. Don't be shy, says Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu. You're here. They're floating around my throne. You're part of my throne.
Then it's saying the famous Rabbi Shmuel ascended to also
Ololam Moraim.
Yeah. So ascended doesn't mean physically, does it? Right. It means that he focused his insight so that he was connected there.
Right. But Moshe Rabbeinu would literally climb the mountain. Did he go up to the heavens?
But, you know, that's
couldn't the angels?
There was an accessibility which was made there. What?
Couldn't the angel's question be, instead of what is he doing here, what are we doing?
That's
here?
A great question. Why did you bring us down? Why did you bring the whole heavens down to the mountain? I think that the reason, perhaps, why it describes it this way is because the first description in the pasuk is Moshe Ola El Ha'olakim. Before it describes Hashem descending onto Har Sinai, which is only later in the process, the first description is Moshe Rabbeinu going up to heaven, going up to God. So it starts from there. Okay. Good morning. A good night.